Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Wednesday edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. Clay and I are ready to take you through all of the latest, including the big breaking news right now that Supreme Court Justice Breyer is, in fact, retiring. This is now reported on CNN, ABC, Fox News got it. So just breaking last few minutes, there's going to be a vacancy on the Supreme Court. Breyer, a staunch leftist, I would say a judicial activist, somebody who legislates from the bench, he will be retiring and they were going to have to replace him. And Clay and I will break down how that's going to be a very interesting and clearly, in some ways, I think, quite contentious process. So we've got that for you in just a moment. Also, school board meetings, once again, a frontline battle, and this time over mask mandates in schools. You'll notice that when it comes to masks, the left is adamantly anti-choice. You are not allowed to have your child in school without a mask on. It's too dangerous, they say. Big fights breaking out over this in Pennsylvania, in Loudoun County, Virginia. We've got a lot to discuss there. Parents are getting really upset over this one. And once again, you make the moms angry. You make the moms and dads across America feel like their kids are, I argue this and I stand behind it, they're being abused by the state. This is abusive. Finally, I think there's pushback. You'll notice in places where there are governors who are Republicans all of a sudden and who are changing the way they enforce masks in schools, Virginia, then all of a sudden the school districts are suing and school boards are saying we will not comply. And there's New York now has a fight making its way through the courts over this, as if masking in schools is going to keep kids safe. I mean, this is absurd. They have no data on this because it's ridiculous. Unless you believe that when someone's having their, you know, their graham crackers and juice time and the mask is down for 30 minutes or an hour or whatever, that they're not being exposed to the same virus that they'd be exposed to. The whole thing makes no sense. Oh, and monoclonal antibodies, another major front in the fight over how we get through this virus and where we go next. FDA saying no monoclonal antibody allowance anymore for people. You're not allowed to be giving it to folks. But Clay, I know we just hit this right before, right at the very top today. I think that you're going to have, I mean, look, there's some things that are obvious about the Supreme Court justice opening here with Breyer set to retire. Rhymes, sorry. It's going to be a leftist. It's going to be a lib they replace him with, a true judicial activist. But it's also, according to Biden, going to be more specific than that. What do you think this turns into? What's the situation?
Well, he promised, this news just broke literally as we were about to come on the air, Stephen Breyer stepping down. I think there's a bunch of big headlines associated with this decision. First of all, it's important to remember that Joe Biden promised that he was going to put a black woman on the Supreme Court. He not only said that he was going to put a woman on, he specifically said that he was going to put a black woman on. So the potential list of nominees is probably the shortest list that has ever existed in the history of the Supreme Court, because there just aren't that many black women sitting at high levels of the judiciary that could be available as nominees for this seat. So let's start there. So it's a relatively short list. Joe Biden has already promised that it's going to be a black woman. Now, there are several different angles associated with this. First of all, let's talk about Breyer's decision. This is an implicit acknowledgement that he does not feel good about Republicans retaining the Senate in the midterms coming up in 2022. Now, the Senate is a lot more up in the air. If you look, and I'm kind of a political junkie, so you look at all these different states and who's going to win them. Remember, Democrats have the 50-50 tiebreak right now. But this is an implicit acknowledgement that he does not like the odds there. And by the way, Mitch McConnell told CNN, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, that there was roughly a 50-50 chance he thought that Republicans would take back the Senate. So in other words, this is not the slam dunk that taking back the House appears to be right now, even if you get a Republican surge in the midterm. But this is a sign that Democrats are not particularly optimistic about taking back the Senate. And that might also be a sign, Mitch McConnell's prediction, that he's trying to play down expectations as opposed to set them too high. Also here, what is going to happen We saw what a, and I want to curse, but I'm not, what a crap show the Brett Kavanaugh commencement, Senate Judiciary Committee hearings were. We saw not as much of a fracas surrounding Amy Coney Barrett. Certainly Gorsuch was not as controversial either. What will this process look like? Will Republicans be united in opposing whoever Democrats put forward? If they are, then that would demand that Kamala Harris, as the president of the Senate, the tiebreaker there, vote 50-50 to break the tie and put someone onto the Supreme Court. And there's going to be a lot of talk about this. Is there any possibility, given that his criteria is he's going to put a black woman on the Supreme Court, is there any possibility that this is the exit strategy for Democrats to run away from Kamala Harris as their presumptive takeover candidate for Joe Biden? Could they, in some way, put her on the Supreme Court? Whether we can get into whether or not she's qualified, she at least qualifies based on Biden's standard of being a black woman. And then it turns into an interesting question. Would Democrats oppose that? Or would they think, hey, you know what? I kind of like the idea of Kamala Harris on the Supreme Court. Let's get her out of the political equation in the same way. And could Kamala Harris break the tie if Republicans were united against her opposition and vote for herself to ascend to the Supreme Court? So there are a bunch of angles here. They had been a lot of pressure on Stephen Breyer to step down. This would appear to be the only Supreme Court seat that is likely to open for Joe Biden. And it would maintain, like you said, Buck, the 6-3 situation in the voting power in the Supreme Court.
There will be less of a battle royale over this just based on the fact that you're not taking somebody who the left has come. You're not taking a seat the left has come to view as, let's be honest about this, built in for them and reliable as left-wing legislation from the Supreme Court, as they can with Sotomayor. And for the most part, Kagan's a little less so than Sotomayor and Breyer up to this point, right? So they know that this is going to go with somebody who aligns with Breyer, who is, I mean, I think you'd argue, the second most liberal, probably, maybe Sotomayor. Obviously, Breyer has a longer history of opinions, but certainly a staunch leftist on the court, no question about it. I think, Clay, if we're in the prediction game right now, you're right about Biden. I mean, you're stating a fact about Biden saying he would nominate a black woman to the Supreme Court. I think what we're going to see is Democrats find a jurist. I don't know who is on the short list right now. I'm sure they have one who is a black female. And I think that individual is likely to have radical left-wing politics through the prism of a judge's bench. I mean, that's going to be something that's absolutely essential for them here. I think you will actually see some Republican senators support it. I think you will see this judge get voted through with Republican support. I do not think you will see a united front. There are some members of the Senate on the Republican side who will simply not vote against the first female black Supreme Court justice. That's what I think is going to end up happening here. And I know people might say, wait, but it's about the credentials and absolutely. But I think that there are some Republican. I mean, guys, does anyone really think Mitt Romney is? Let's start to look at some of the folks involved here. You think who's Ben Sasse? Who's Mitt Romney going to be voting for in this process?
I will say this as this is me putting my lawyer hat on. Supreme Court nominations were nowhere near the political show for almost the entirety of our nation's history. In other words, the presumption was if you are the president and your party controls the Senate, you should get the opportunity to put somebody on the Supreme Court that you choose, presuming that they're qualified, right? We've had issues before where people have been nominated. Remember, George W. Bush tried to put Harriet Myers on the Supreme
Court.
Not
good. And
people
not
just
even
said, yeah,
the right, to be fair. Remember, the right turned on him on that.
That's
one.
Right. And I mean, that's to me the standard, right? You want to look, there are all different sorts of people who can agree or disagree with you. Every opinion that Justice Clay Travis would issue would be different than every opinion that Justice Sotomayor would put out, right? It doesn't mean, however, that because those opinions are different, someone is not qualified to be on the Supreme Court. So, I don't know that when you know already that the votes are there, clearly every Democrat's going to support it. I don't know. It feels very much to me like a charade to make a big deal of opposing someone, assuming that they are qualified. So much like what happened with Amy Coney Barrett, you know, that was one of those situations, Buck, where she was replacing Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So you were flipping the power in a dynamic in a large extent. And yet Amy Coney Barrett was so eminently qualified. And I thought the Trump administration and McConnell and everybody else did such a phenomenal job of rolling her out. There was a terror on the Democratic side, really, to attack her aggressively because she was a suburban mom, because she was eminently qualified, and she kind of coasted, even though we were in the middle of a divisive presidential election. And I feel like if Biden puts forward, and I'm not an expert in all the possible nominees here, I feel like if Biden puts forward a nominee who is within the scope of reasonableness, I don't think there's much of a battle here.
There's not going to be.
You already know what the end result is.
I think we're almost assured there will not be a battle over this. Republicans don't have the desire, nor really much of the ability. I also do believe, and you know, mark my words on this, you'll get a few Republicans who will be happy to vote for it, assuming it's this is a jurist who fits the established Biden criteria for diversity and inclusion, but also from a legal background. But in terms of Amy Coney Barrett, they just couldn't have a bunch of people show up who said Amy Coney Barrett sexually assaulted me 30 years ago. Like, that wasn't going to work, right?
I mean, that's true.
But I don't think that they learned a lesson in terms of, oh, now they're going to be less disgusting than they were after Kavanaugh. They just couldn't run the same playbook. And they started to try a little bit on some of the abortion stuff with Amy Coney Barrett, but it didn't have the same resonance. They couldn't create the circus.
They tried to say, like, I think she's adopted a couple of minority children. And they trotted out like that's racist.
They were temporarily anti-adoption on the left, yes, because of Amy Coney, which was disgusting. But these people are lunatics.
And then they realized that was blowing back on them, and they knew that they needed suburban women in order to have a chance to win against Trump. And so they ran in the opposite direction. But here's the bigger takeaway, Buck, as we go to break. What's likely to happen is for 2 years, if the Republicans take back the Senate, there's not going to be anybody confirmed to the Supreme Court. So if there were another vacancy after November of 22, there wouldn't be the votes in order to get there. That's likely to be decided in 24, much like what happened with Scalia in 16. If somebody dies or somebody has to step down after 22, after the midterms, assuming that Republicans have control of the Senate, we could have a 2-year vacancy.
Breyer's the one that is, I mean, he's the guy that is assumed that this was going to happen just based on age and the political realities around him. So I don't think you're, I mean, who else? Thomas?
Well,
just
when you get to people who are over 70 years old,
they may retire.
Health conditions can arise. I mean, nobody, I don't think, foresaw Scalia dying when he did. And so I just think that's worth factoring in there. We could have a 2024 election that also is definitively deciding who's going to be nominating a Supreme Court justice like we saw in 16.
We love our Black Rifle Coffee here on this show, folks. It's here in studio with me right now. We like to be fully caffeinated, drinking the good stuff. Black Rifle makes amazing tasting coffee. When you make a pot each morning, or like me, I'm a little lazy, so I use the K-Cups because it's easy. It's so delicious. And this is a veteran-owned company founded by a great guy I've known for years who brought his lifelong passion for a cup of coffee to a company that is exploding in popularity and is all about helping with veteran law enforcement and first responder causes. And the best way to enjoy our freedom-filled coffee is with the Black Rifle Coffee Club. Clay, tell us about the coffee club and how folks can get hooked up.
Man, it is a fantastic thing. I love Black Rifle Coffee. I usually have one during the show. I got the Mocha Cold Brew. Absolutely love it. You can sign up as well. By the way, they brew this in Utah and in my home state of Tennessee. Beans that are sourced out of Colombia and Brazil. Hook yourself up right now with the BlackRifleCoffee.com. Use our code Clay and Buck in the checkout process to get 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's BlackRifleCoffee.com, code Clay and Buck. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We are talking about all of the breaking news here as it pertains to the Supreme Court and everything surrounding it. Justice Breyer, news breaking as we started the show, stepping down. Buck, we were talking about it off the air. There are several different names that are out there. Remember, Joe Biden has promised that he is going to end up with a black woman on the Supreme Court. And I believe we have a couple of cuts of the announcement on CNN, if I'm not mistaken. Here is the breaking news from CNN as they discussed Stephen Breyer and also who might take over for him.
Huge news, John. This has actually just been confirmed by our Wolf Blitzer that at 83 years old, after 27 years on the Supreme Court, Justice Stephen Breyer, the leading liberal on the court, he will retire. We're still not exactly sure of the timeline, but presumably not until the end of this term, which ends usually at the end of June. This retirement announcement comes after what has been a persistent drumbeat of calls from progressives to retire from the court, dating back now just about a year. It was about a year ago when the progressive group Demand Justice actually hired a mobile billboard that drove around Capitol Hill in front of the Supreme Court, urging Breyer to retire.
This is just another admission, Clay, that the Supreme Court is now a political institution, as much as people like to pretend for, you know, the sanctity of our democracy or whatever. And depending on the day, they either say it is or is not that. Clearly, this was a political move. I think it's funny, too. She says, probably, I think it's a safe bet, Clay. I think he's probably going to retire at the end of this term. I don't think they're going to wait until after the midterm elections, given Joe Biden's poll numbers. But it is also remarkable. This guy's 83 years old. I know there are 83-year-olds listening to this who could, you know, run faster than me, do more push-ups, they're in amazing shape and all that. But I mean, that it was even a consideration that he was going to continue on much beyond this is pretty astonishing.
Well, they pushed Ginsburg, the left did, to retire for a long time. And so far as we know, Breyer has been relatively healthy. And Ginsburg refused to step down. And then, as a result, ends up having the opposite party give her replacement, Amy Coney Barrett. And look, this has been an issue going back. I mean, Thurgood Marshall refused to step down, and then he ends up dying, and his replacement is Clarence Thomas, right? So, this is, you know, Anthony Kennedy made the choice. Hey, I'm ready to step down. I want Trump to be able to replace me. Now Stephen Breyer is making that decision. It's honestly, I think, a smart move for a Supreme Court justice to step down and know that his seat, if you want to say his or her seat, is going to be replaced by the party that nominated them.
Other people can do these jobs. I mean, there's a lot of very smart lawyers in the country.
Yes.
As we all know.
They are,
I mean,
replaceable.
You know, right. You know, like this notion that you have to stay in this role. The fact that Nancy Pelosi just announced she's actually running again. I mean, I'm just wondering, is Pelosi going to be 100? And still showing up on TV and, you know, telling all the plebes that we should just listen to her while she's got all the mansions lined up behind her? It's ridiculous.
Well, I think, Buck, you and I, fortunately, are still relatively young. I think some of these people who end up around those ages are afraid that if they don't have the motivating factor of the job, whether it's Nancy Pelosi, Stephen Breyer, this happens in sports a lot, where if you step down, Joe Paterno and Bear Bryant, like, you almost immediately die because that's what you're living for. I think there's a fear there.
It's a little morbid, but fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's dark, but I think there is that fear out there.
Home prices are up 20% over the past year. And even then, some cities are reporting bigger percentages than that. There's so much evidence in our economy, the value of the dollar is shrinking. It just doesn't go as far as it once did. You know this. Doesn't bode well for the long-term value of your savings. Protect your wealth now. A lot of people rely on the purchase of gold. I mean real gold. Oxford Gold Group can help you out with this. They will have real gold delivered to your home. It's amazing when you get that real gold in your hands for the first time. I'm a gold buyer from the Oxford Gold Group. You should be too. They'll help you protect your savings and understand how much gold, what gold you should get for your portfolio. Call them right now at 833-404-GOLD. That's the Oxford Gold Group at 833-404-GOLD. Learn how you can have real gold in your IRA or delivered to your door or both. 833-404-GOLD. The school board battles are back with masks on the front lines. Mask mandates in places like Virginia, New York. People are fighting this one out. We got the Clay and Buck Show back now with you. Thanks for being here. This is a moment where we have to ask, what is the plan? Because we have Fauci and the rest of them now saying the same stuff they've said all along, which is, we know how to control this virus. No, they don't. Okay, clearly they don't. Clearly all the stuff that we've made to do, all the stupid nonsense, didn't actually work. The mandates didn't actually work. And they can't stop the spread of the virus that was a fantasy to begin with and a very dangerous one from the perspective of liberty and the rule of law in this country. So parents are upset because here's what's happened. In some places, the people voted and they put individuals in charge, Virginia notably, but there are other places as well, where they have now been told you don't have to have kids masked up in schools. You will not be surprised to find out that the neurotic parents who have been masking their children willingly the whole time, which is now state-sanctioned child abuse, to be very clear, the parents who have been willingly doing that and say, oh, this is great. There's a lot of them here in New York, a lot of them other places across the country. They are outraged at the notion that another child might be sitting next to theirs without a mask on. Oh, my gosh, you know, putting little Timmy or little Sally in so much jeopardy. That's the idea. Parents are completely outraged about the way that not only some of these school districts are reacting to the new rules, which rely on, Clay, what we've established, which is cloth masks don't work, everybody. Sorry. Sorry it's a surprise to not the listeners of this show, but to the libs who mask up their kids. Here is in Loudoun County, Virginia. Once again, we have a situation, a circumstance where parents are speaking out.
It has been 686 days since our kids have had a normal school experience. We know things now that we didn't know 686 days ago, namely that children are not at high risk for serious illness from COVID. That is a fact. Masking is a psychological stressor. It disrupts learning and the ability to communicate. It interferes with happiness. Masks are particularly detrimental to young children, those with autism, and those who are struggling with anxiety. To those who say students don't mind when they're used to it, I encourage you to ask them. So why do we mask kids who are factually at an extremely low risk? The answer is simple. To make triple vaccinated adults feel safe.
So, Clay, you know, the mask is just a part of the overall debate right now. You might have seen over at MSNBC, one of their lib anchors did this whole thread on Twitter about how, what is everybody complaining about, Clay? Schools are open. It's fine. Shut up, peasants. What's the problem? Schools may be open, but they have insane mask restrictions in place. My own high school has kids on the basketball court masked up. I have a friend in Baltimore who just emailed me last night to tell me that her children, about your kid's age, by the way, have to mask up during all sports. They're masked up by the school while they're playing sports. No field trips, no after school for a lot of different kids, all kinds of crazy restrictions. It is not normal, and we shouldn't pretend that it's normal.
Well, and there still are a lot of kids that are not in school, Buck. Like this idea that everybody is back and everything's back to normal. No, no. Even Joe Biden himself in his press conference pointed out that around 5% of schools were not actually in session right now. And by the way, that's one out of every 20 kids, 2 years nearly after we shut down for the first time. And those numbers are continuing to grow. There's still lots of kids being quarantined. There are still all sorts of issues associated with everything surrounding masking in schools. And Buck, remember, I went and talked to my school board back in August, I believe it was now, of 2021. And that was, to me, sort of the moment that crystallized how much of a rebellion is brewing in the suburbs that helped to set the table for what took place in November in Virginia, right? And nearly took place in New Jersey. Suburban parents in particular, the swing voters there, are fed up. Moms are furious about the fact that their kids still have to wear masks. And by the way, COVID policy is still a mess. My kids right now are home today because individual schools, if the number of teachers test positive, they're allowing individual schools as opposed to school districts. This is the first day they've missed all year. They're going to be home Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then be back on Monday. But it's based on the policies that are in place as it comes to teachers testing positive. And I would imagine, Buck, with all of these people who are super nervous about COVID, the overwhelming number of the tests, which we didn't talk about, but guess where those tests are from that Biden is sending out? China, right? We bought like $1 billion worth of tests from China to send out to all of the American households, which many Americans are getting and being like, oh, the irony here.
Florida, as we know, always got to talk about Florida, we're talking about freedom, has a ban on mask mandates in schools. That doesn't mean you can't wear a mask. It means you cannot force, as a function of school policy, children to wear a mask. I mean, to me, this is not all that different from if Florida had a, you know, anti-corporal punishment rule. Like, you can't hit kids with rulers, because I think that masking up kids is abuse. But if parents are choosing to do this because they're neurotics, I mean, that's up to them. The point here, though, is that we have an enormous state with tens of millions of people living in it that has a no mask mandatory rule in schools, and it's fine. Kids aren't dropping dead. They don't have outrageous COVID case numbers in the schools.
Right.
Everything is fine. But what you have is California, New York, they don't care about the evidence. They don't care about reality. And by the way, in Virginia, they're fighting this out now. The school board, Loudoun County School Board, is saying that they're taking this to court. They got to mask up all the kids, Clay. This is what CNN's Jim Acosta, so sad for Jim, the ratings these days over at CNN. Here's what he says about how what Virginia is like now.
The new culture wars are impacting our laws, and some experts fear they could be weakening our democracy just as badly as the big lie. Here to discuss, Molly Jung Fast, contributing writer for The Atlantic and author of the newsletter, Wait, What? Molly, I seem to remember Glenn Youngkin campaigning in a fleece vest in Virginia. He was running as a different kind of Republican. I was told there was going to be a vest. Not a Soviet-style police state across the Potomac from Washington.
It's amazing, Buck, to think about the way that they would classify giving parents a choice as representing a Soviet-style police state. See, that they have tried to turn freedom into a form of authoritarianism. Again, I think we have to keep echoing and reinforcing this, Buck. They're not banning masks. They are letting parents choose whether they want their kids to wear masks or not, which is the very definition of freedom. It's the exact opposite of authoritarianism. The government mandating that you do something is what a dictator would do.
Who gives you the best value for your dollar when it comes to cell phone service? It's the same company that has values that align with your own. Pure Talk is that company. Switch and get your cell phone service from a company that has the best prices for your cell phone service, uses the exact same towers and the same 5G network as one of those big cell phone carriers we all know of, but they give it to you at a much better price. And not only that, you'll get the peace of mind that you're supporting a veteran-run business with employees all here in the U.S. I mean, those are just a couple of the reasons we're proud customers. But Clay, that monthly bill, a lot lower too.
No doubt. Average family on a plan can save over $800 a year, and very likely your new cell phone bill will be half what your current cell phone bill is. So from your cell phone right now, dial #250, say Pure Talk. You'll save an additional 50% off your first month. That's dial #250, say Pure Talk. Do it today. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. We were talking about all the craziness that's going on in the state of Virginia as the battles over masks and CRT and more continue. We've got Carrie Lucas joining us now. She's the head of the Independent Women's Network, a mom of five kids in public schools in Virginia. Carrie, I've got a couple of kids in public schools here in Tennessee. I went and spoke out against masks back before the school year really got rolling in August. I know you guys are continuing to fight these battles in Virginia. What's the latest there?
Yeah, I hope you've had more success than we have. You know, it's interesting because obviously we've had this wonderful new world where Governor Youngkin comes in and really is ready to stand up for parents on this first day of office. He issued an executive order that didn't rescind the mask mandate, but immediately gave parents an opt-out. You were supposed to have the ability to opt your kids out of the mask mandates pretty much, and that was supposed to start this week. But some of the Northern Virginia, kind of intransigent, blue school districts pushed back. They said no. There's a big lawsuit battle going on. And my school board, the kids' system that they're in has said that any kid who tries to come to school without a mask is getting suspended. And, you know, I decided to make a point. Got two of my kids thrown out of school yesterday. So,
how old are your kids?
So, I have my oldest is 16 and my littlest is 7. And so I just went to our elementary school where the stakes are pretty low, and it's a much smaller school, so I have a good relationship with the teachers and the administration there. So, so it seemed like the safest place to kind of do this pushback.
Carrie, you shared a photo. I mean, it seems like this is getting pretty tense, even at your own school. We're talking about kids here, whether or not they're wearing masks. Are there parents who are, what are they? Are they going to call cops on people who don't wear the mask? I mean, what is the enforcement mechanism here? And are there other parents who are coming along to your side of things more publicly than they have in the past?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because I feel like the conversation we could be having today could be entirely different if the Fairfax County Public School System had just had a little faith in parents and in kind of humanity. It's so funny because when I knew I was going to do this, and my grievance is with the school board, which is refusing to give parents this option, and I know that my little elementary school here is just following their orders. So I went ahead the night before this was going to happen. The first day of school was Tuesday for the kids had off for some reason on Monday. So I sent an email to the principal and said, hey, I feel strongly about this. I want to exercise my rights. I know that this puts you in an awkward position. You know, I didn't want to blindside them. I was very polite and said I would accept that they have to suspend my kids. And the thing that was so strange is, I arrive at the school in the morning with my two little kids in tow and with a couple of friends, one of whom was, a reporter for the Daily Wire was coming with us. Luke, who is an area, it lives real close to the school, and another woman, Asra Nomani, who filmed some of it, just so we had a record of what was happening. And there was a security guard there who was really gave you the sense that they were expecting some kind of trouble, which is ridiculous because, of course, we were just there to have this conversation with our school. It was very strange that they felt the need to really treat us as if we were hostile and couldn't be trusted.
How long are the suspensions?
Oh, just for the day. So they basically, it was interesting because you could tell that the woman who was in charge of the school, the vice principal, she very much avoided. You could tell she didn't want to say that they were suspended. And my conversation with her was very cordial. But at the same time, there was and some of this is on tape at Azra Nomani's Substack, where you can watch this video, where the security guard is really hassling, especially Luke, the reporter for the Daily Wire, who eventually wrote a story on this, telling me to get off the sidewalk and really treating him as though, that he didn't have a right to be there, which seemed very strange and just crazy. And so that's what made the story. And the funniest part was this security guard at one point pulled down the mask to bark at some of my friends and this and Luke. And they said, why do you need to pull your mask down? And he's like, well, I can't talk through it. And we said, that's exactly right. That's why we're here.
Carrie, so this is the part of this. Funny. Explain, the governor comes in. He's the governor, right? And up, I live in New York, and so I've had to just, accept the stupidity of whether it was the former mayor de Blasio or the former or now current governor, whether it was Cuomo or Hochul. You know, their order was treated as law when it comes to things like masking. So Youngkin comes in, he changes things, but there are school districts that are just saying no? I mean, is that what's happening? Because that seems kind of crazy.
Yeah, it seems lawless. It's absolutely. And, we're being told that we should sit back and wait and that the courts, the Virginia Supreme Court, is going to sort out who has the authority here. But I agree. I see no reason why the default should be that my school boards get to continue to really cram down this mask requirement on our kids, which, again, this would allow parents who wanted to mask to continue to mask their kids, but to give us some freedom from this absolutely ridiculous, ridiculous rule at this point. I don't understand why it is that Fairfax County Public Schools has this authority when this EO is in place and hasn't been stayed.
Carrie, so here's my question. I'm obviously a parent who is a complete in agreement with everything that you're doing. I'm also a lawyer. So my thought is every day that you show up without your kids wearing a mask, they suspend you for that day. Is that theoretically what the policy would be?
Well, yeah, that is what the policy is. So my kids did go back to school today. I didn't, they missed so much time with online school last year that I didn't want to keep them out. But yeah, one reason why I went there yesterday, because I wanted them to have to enforce this, kind of to go through with it, because if no parents, kind of objected, then there wouldn't be any harm being caused, and I didn't think we would be able to, or no, actionable harm, where now my kids were barred from having an education yesterday, so I've options open, I think, if I did want to.
Well, that's what I'm saying. From a legal perspective, at some point, if you are defying, and I'm just working through the law here, if you're defying as the school board the governor of the state of Virginia's regulations to allow parents to choose whether their kids wear masks. And if they are effectively standing in the schoolhouse door, to use a historical analogy, and barring your children from being able to enter, yours or other children, then you would have a very strong case legally to immediately go to court and say, this policy that is being implemented by this Northern Virginia school district is not permissible under the law. So I would hope you and or other parents are going to seek redress because they specifically barred your children. You have evidence of it occurring from entering school and getting an education in direct contravance of the rule of the governor. Like that is a pretty clear cut case, I would think.
Yeah, I hope so. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, I hate this kind of thing. I think that it's so frustrating. But here we have, it's not only just that the school is refusing, they're using my tax dollars to put their own lawsuit against the governor. You know, they were hiring security guards to harass us yesterday. They had a PR flack there, to make sure that, you know, that people couldn't listen to me have this, you know, very polite conversation with this, this woman who was suspending my kids. They're so wasteful and hostile. That you're right. Absolutely. There are people speaking about the potential for a lawsuit, and we're going to see how this all plays out.
Carrie Lucas, everybody, thanks for being with us from the Independent Women's Forum. Great to have you, and good luck in this fight because it's very important.
Great. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right. Thanks so much. Clay, I got to say, you know, I just wanted to get that on the record there because they're just saying no now. Like, they don't have the power anymore. People have thrown out their lunatic lib governor. They don't have the right to do this, and schools are just saying no. This is
lawless. Standing in the schoolhouse door. This is George Wallace style over masks. They're not allowing parents who don't want their kids to wear masks to get an education. And I'm going to share Carrie's Twitter handle so you guys can, if you're in Northern Virginia, you're listening to us, I'll share that online at Clay Travis. She was fantastic. More props to her and other parents for standing up against this. This is crazy.
Get into some more of the latest from Fauci and others coming up.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.